I'm Chris Boyd. Up next on Think, probing the hype around the mysterious conspiracy trafficker known as QAnon. Who's drawn into such outlandish rumors and who benefits from spreading them around? We'll spend this hour with Atlantic executive editor Adrienne LaFrance, whose reporting brought her in touch with people convinced that Q is a highly ranked insider trying to warn about secret evil forces within our own government. We'll talk about how Q's followers think President Trump signals to them that he's on their side and fighting the conspiracy at every turn. And we'll discuss the evidence that the person or people who post as Q are true believers or master manipulators. Our conversation starts after a short break. In turbulent times, facts can be genuinely comforting. When we have access to objective journalism and scientific consensus, we feel empowered. Unfortunately, conspiracy theory based on total nonsense can also give us a sense of control when, in fact, the folks who buy into it are the ones being manipulated. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Enter Q, or QAnon, a mysterious internet presence claiming status as a high-ranking U.S. official with knowledge of highly classified government plots against innocent citizens. Claims pushed by Q led a follower named Edgar Madison Welch to arm up and storm a D.C. pizza place looking to rescue children held captive in its basement, enslaved, he thought, by Hillary Clinton for ritual sex abuse. Not only was there no abuse happening at Comet Ping Pong Pizza, the place doesn't even have a basement. Q's followers are undeterred, seeing themselves as lonely patriots in a fight to liberate the country from nefarious forces plotting against regular Americans. Their most official ally, as they see it, one Donald J. Trump. And whether or not he actually believes QAnon's cryptic allusions to an evil deep state network, the president seems to be signaling to Q devotees that he is on their side. Adrienne LaFrance is executive editor at The Atlantic. Her article, The Prophecies of Q, American Conspiracy Theories Are Entering a Dangerous New Phase, appears in the June issue. Adrienne, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having me.
If we were to go track down wherever Q is on the web, reaching followers at the moment, what kinds of postings would we find? What is a typical message or prediction?
So a typical message, which Q followers refer to as Q drops, is often sort of cryptic, almost poetic, you could say. There are sort of scattered references to things that are part of the in-group language. So you'll see sort of taglines like enjoy the show or where we go one, we go all, which is sort of a Q motto. And then, clues to be deciphered. So Q, whoever is posting as Q, tells people to focus attention on certain individuals, or it's fairly cryptic, but you see the same characters and ideas surfacing over and over.
Those signature phrases just seem designed to freak people out.
It's very like, you could imagine it being part of a bad spy movie too. Like there's a lot of sort of cliched, as you said, sort of deliberately ominous language.
So what kinds of hints does Q drop about a coming apocalypse and the form that that might take?
So the basic premise is that there are this corrupt group of high profile individuals who are working together. You mentioned this idea of ritualistic child abuse, but the other part of the theory is that they are facing sort of imminent comeuppance. And so this notion that Donald Trump is working to fight this sort of quote unquote deep state backed cabal, and that in the near future, there will be mass arrests and these evildoers will be held accountable. So that's sort of on the other side of this, the storm is what they refer to this event as. There'll be sort of a spiritual awakening for everyone else, and the evildoers will be held accountable. That is the idea.
Does Q have an easily identifiable political orientation?
It's definitely a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. So it's interesting because you'll often see it referenced as being far right. And that's not actually exactly right. It's really the defining quality is that it is pro-Trump. And the president is sort of the savior character within the narrative of the conspiracy theory, but it's not right-leaning in the sense of being ideologically Republican or resembling any sort of normal right-leaning political persuasion.
In fact, one of the things you learned was that conspiracy theory, conspiracy thinking rather, has a tendency to sort of cross party lines. It's not that people on the left or on the right are more susceptible to thinking this way.
That's right. I mean, it's really about it's really about someone's propensity for rationalism versus conspiracism. And you'll see, I mean, it often depends, in terms of which conspiracy theories are trendy at any given moment. You can look to the person or party in power. And when, you know, Republicans are in power, there are often very high profile, more democratic oriented conspiracy theories and vice versa. And so it's not that one's ideology, political ideology, predicts their propensity for conspiracism.
So the guy who carried out the raid on Comet Ping Pong in D.C., the pizza place, he realized he was wrong and essentially said, you know, my bad. I didn't mean to hurt any innocent people. I believe no one was hurt, but there was obviously a very disturbing incident there. Does he now say that Q must be nonsense, or what is his official position on this?
Well, so this is what's interesting and disturbing, too. So this was someone who was really obsessed with the conspiracy theory known as Pizzagate, which is sort of the precursor for QAnon. So QAnon borrowed a lot of the central themes from Pizzagate. And this person, I mean, he was sent to federal prison for the conviction associated with what happened that day. And you're right, no one was hurt. He did fire a weapon within the pizza shop, but thankfully no one was hurt. And after the fact, he said that sort of, you know, like the intel that he had wasn't 100%. So there wasn't, he did express, and you can see this in court documents, real, what seemed like real remorse for the recklessness with which he acted that day. But he didn't reject the theory itself and seemed to still be sort of flirting with it, or just that the overarching theory could be true even if Comet Ping Pong was in fact just a pizza shop.
How were those messages magnified by Alex Jones?
Well, Alex Jones and others have used their platforms. In Alex Jones's case, it's, you know, he has been on social media, obviously the radio show, the website of InfoWars, to validate conspiracy theories. And so for him specifically, he's really pushed a lot of this kind of thing, including Pizzagate, before sort of backing away from it. And so you'll see this, I mean, all over the web, though, that these social platforms that are designed for speed in publishing and that reward strong emotional reactions to things, it's, you know, the entire sort of architecture of the internet is built in a way for misinformation, which is one of the big reasons why these theories spread so much now. You can imagine a sort of QAnon-like theory existing in the past, but it wouldn't spread to the degree that it has without the technology we have today.
The FBI sees QAnon as potentially a domestic terror threat. Has Q been linked to other incidents of attempted real-world violence or in fact, executed real-world violence?
Yeah, so there have been several incidents of certainly people who have carried out crimes who the police then report that they expressed an interest in QAnon. You know, there was a man in Nevada who was arrested a couple of years ago after he blocked traffic on the Hoover Dam in an armored truck. And he was demanding the release of an inspector general's report on Hillary Clinton's emails and had, you know, referenced Q or QAnon related themes as interests. And so there certainly are many examples of real world situations that pose clear danger to ordinary citizens because, or at least in relation to people's interest in QAnon and conspiracy theories more broadly.
What do we know about the origins of Q? When and where did these postings first start to appear?
So it first started in October of 2017, and an anonymous user began posting the person who is now referred to, or people, we don't know who Q is, on 4chan, which is an image board. It's known for, you know, gross memes and some really awful photos and things that people share there. It's a pretty terrible corner of the internet, quite frankly. And so Q started posting there and initially posted that Hillary Clinton's arrest was imminent. And so that began to gain attention, and it sort of just snowballed from there.
But how did Q gain such a following after starting in a place? I mean, 4chan is not particularly easy for the uninitiated to access, right? Or
That's right. It's not a tremendously user-friendly interface, and you have to sort of know how to find your way around to understand what's going on. And so, yeah, I mean, this goes back to the social web. So these Q posts garnered enough attention from people who were willing to then sort of use the megaphones of Facebook and YouTube. And you now see, I mean, this began just within the months of the first posts ever appearing on the internet, but now especially you see entire YouTube channels run by individuals who have their own massive followings. Just, these are channels that people subscribe to where someone might just kind of describe their own interpretations of the latest Q drops, and those are tremendously popular. And then you have entire Facebook groups where people are picking apart Q drops and trying to derive meaning. And so it's really these, Reddit before Reddit banned Q related content, that was a huge place where people would pick apart the meaning of these things. And so it's really through the social web that it has spread.
Yeah, tell us about this guy, David Hayes, who believes that he was called by God to promote Q.
Yeah, so David Hayes is someone who goes by the handle online Praying Medic, and he for a long time had a presence online where he was doing sort of taking prayer requests, and he has self-published several books related to his spirituality. He describes himself as someone who's a former atheist who then found faith and started, publishing on YouTube and Facebook about it. And eventually, in December of 2017, so just months after Q first appears, he catches wind of Q and writes on his Facebook page that he has felt, he often writes about his interpreting his dreams as being messages from God. And it writes in December of 2017 that he's become aware of this Q thing and he's interested and he's going to start sort of getting more into it and broadcasting on his YouTube channel about it. And that's exactly what he's done. And he's developed this huge audience of people who come to him to understand. He has a sort of like QAnon 101, and he writes these long Twitter threads about what the latest Q drops mean, and is generally an enthusiastic supporter of Donald Trump. And so he's developed this whole sort of persona, sort of a Q influencer, if you will, around this conspiracy theory.
So he was willing to talk to you, but not on the record?
We exchanged some emails, and he didn't want to be interviewed. And so, but yeah, I mean, one of the questions I had when I went to a Trump rally in Toledo in January, there was a huge banner that referenced Q that someone had hung on a building. And it also had Praying Medic written on it, which was part of what led me to be interested in his affiliation to Q. And so I asked him if he, knew, had anything to do with the banner, like had he paid for it? Did he know about it? And he said in an email that he was aware of it because his Twitter followers, someone had mentioned it to him, but that he had nothing to do with it. And yeah, I did ask for a couple of times if he'd be willing to be interviewed, and he declined.
Any idea why?
I mean, he does profess pretty stark distrust for journalists and legitimate news outlets on his Twitter account. And so my sense is it probably, I'm not sure that he would see an upside in talking to a journalist who's skeptical of the conspiracy theory he's promoting when he has his own huge audience that he can speak to directly. So that's my impression.
My guest is Adrienne LaFrance. She's executive editor at The Atlantic, and her article, The Prophecies of Q, American Conspiracy Theories Are Entering a Dangerous New Phase, appears in the June issue. If you'd like to join us, call 800-933-5372.
the calm before the storm.
What's the storm?
Could be the calm, or the calm before the storm.
What storm, Mr. President?
You'll find out.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. That was President Trump speaking at a dinner with military leaders in 2017. My guest this hour is Adrienne LaFrance, executive editor at The Atlantic. Her article in the June issue is called The Prophecies of Q. American conspiracy theories are entering a dangerous new phase. Adrienne, that expression, calm before the storm, is certainly not limited to Q or to President Trump, but it is. It does seem to be a real buzz phrase. Is there any indication that President Trump follows Q?
Q followers believe so and spend a lot of energy focusing on what they see as possible hints that Trump is in on this. You know, one of the skills he has in terms of captivating and holding people's attention, which is one of the president's very clear gifts, is that he sort of walks right up to the edge of plausible deniability. So he'll retweet a lot of popular or QAnon supporting accounts, and he'll even retweet memes that draw from the sort of in-group lingo for QAnon followers. And so they'll see that and say, look, he's sending us a message. And meanwhile, he'll tweet something like, you know, one recent example from March was, you know, he tweeted something like, I have no idea what this means, but it looks great. And it was a QAnon meme. And so it's sort of right up to the edge of him still being able to say like, oh, I didn't know what that was. And yet the group that pays attention to this feels like he's sending them a message.
Secretary of State Pompeo is extremely busy. So if you have any question for him right now, could you do that? Because you know what I'd like to do? I'd like him to go back to the State Department, or as they call it, the Deep State Department, if you don't mind. I'd like to have him go back and do his job. So does anybody have any question? Please.
All right. Well, Adrienne, what does the president have to gain from positioning his own State Department as a kind of fifth column? Is he just speaking here to Q type people?
Well, there are a number of conspiracy theories that might entail a belief that there is sort of a quote unquote deep state really controlling things. But I think the phenomenon here is more that his political success has been derived from this sort of anti-elite, anti-establishment, anti-institutional mentality and being sort of the outsider coming into politics. So that was a big part of how he campaigned and ultimately won the presidency. And so you're seeing if this pro-Trump conspiracy theory draws naturally on a lot of those same themes. So, you know, you have this worldview that is anti-institutional that plugs very neatly into the larger Q narrative. And so it's a great question. I mean, why would the president be battling against his own intelligence agencies? But it's just such a big part of the political persona he's developed that I think he couldn't, you know, detach himself from it if he tried. It's who he is as a politician.
How does Q signal to followers that he or she is somehow this like highly connected person within the federal government? Like what kinds of clues have there been?
So early on, whoever is posting as Q would reference Q clearance and sort of make it more than a suggestion that they had some sort of special high level clearance. There's also just generally a big focus on the military and just, you know, over and over throughout these different clues or Q drops, the suggestion that Q has special access to insider high level military information.
Has Q given any reason to explain why they wouldn't quit that position in such a corrupt government or come out publicly to reveal all this supposed evil and wrongdoing within the government?
Right. Like, so why be so cryptic? Why not right. just come out and tell people? Right. So, I mean, there are many, many sub-theories within the Q universe. And one of the sort of prominent ones is that Q is a model for some sort of future open source intelligence agency. So people will argue that the entire structure of this thing, the decision to post on 4chan, the clues, the sort of predictions that don't come true, the believers will explain this away as a new information system designed to operate the way that it is. It doesn't answer the question of why make it so complicated, but it does hit at this thing, which you'll find again and again the more you look at QAnon, which is there's sort of a tidy answer for everything. Many of those answers aren't logical, but there is this mentality of explaining away any seeds of doubt.
So I know you went in as a deep skeptic and remain a deep skeptic of this kind of thinking. When you spend enough time immersed in that, I mean, did you feel any pull whatsoever to, like, I can see how people are able to make sense of this? Or is it baffling to you that anybody sees this kind of melange of contradictory information and buys it?
Right. So I really did go into this reporting wanting to understand, like, why would anyone believe this? Like, what is it that this a belief in this kind of nonsense is providing for people? Like, what? Because I didn't think it was just that people were stupid. Like, there's clearly something that's satisfying to the people who are engaging in this. And one of the interesting things that occurred to me in the course of my reporting is that a lot of the ways that people talk about the people who really believe or seem to really believe in QAnon, the value that they're deriving from it, they talk about, like, the importance of doing their own research and seeking truth. And just the language they use is honestly quite journalistic. Like, I of course understand as a journalist the desire to seek truth and report it. I completely understand the need to be skeptical of the official narrative. Like, that's a journalistic mentality. Mm-hmm. But the point where it breaks down is it's a complete rejection of empiricism. It is, you know, time and time again, the things that people are accepting as true are demonstrably false. And so it's like using the language of journalism, which I can appreciate and understand firsthand, to engage in this mass rejection of reason, which is anti-journalistic. And so that's just one of the many contradictions where it's like, they're saying they care about truth, but they're not, you know, they're rejecting it. So it was a really fascinating sort of mind melting thing to encounter. But I didn't find myself ever pulled to believe, not even a little bit.
What kind of people become Q followers?
Well, so again, I think this goes to the pro-Trump aspect of it. So it really is a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. And then from there, it's just about the person's propensity for conspiracism. And so I think, I mean, this is what I was mentioning about it sort of plugging into an existing worldview. I think the people who I talk to, and this bears out when you talk to, like, the political scientists who study conspiracy theories, that it's not just that, you know, someone who's otherwise highly rational is on YouTube one day, encounters QAnon, and is converted into a total conspiracy theorist. It's that this conspiracy theory is broadly disseminated and reaching people who are already predisposed. And so I think, you know, it's people with distrust of institutions and who feel perhaps some, you know, that things aren't going in this country in a direction that they would want it to. There's this, you know, anti-elite sort of worldview. And so a lot of those kinds of factors that might also make someone be more willing to support Trump as their political candidate also then dovetail into the sort of foundational worldview of this conspiracy theory.
David is on the line with a question in Grapevine, Texas. Hi, David.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. First question is, I just want to know how many followers QAnon has. And second, you just kind of answered that question, the kind of followers that he does have. But more importantly, I was wondering if we could track how many followers, you know, are continuing to grow, and can we track that kind of demographic and how they actually, you know, more specifically, how they become that way.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, this is a really good question, and it's something I really wrestled with in reporting this piece and in the fact-checking process, because I have the clear sense, and there is evidence to suggest that the sort of adherence to this conspiracy theory is growing rapidly and spreading rapidly, and yet it's not as though there's, like, a registry where you can count the number of members, and then even more complicated still is, like, how many people actually believe versus the people who might be participating just to kill time or because they think it's ridiculous or whatever else. And so the way that I thought about this for my piece was looking at the groups devoted in earnest to following Q. And you could, you know, compile a variety of different metrics from, you know, Twitter activity is a small population online as it is, so you wouldn't want to invest too much in that. But certainly Facebook groups, the number of people subscribing to these sort of Q influencers like Praying Medic. And you just see, there's also like the commerce side of it. I mean, you see self-published books on Amazon devoted to Q. You see jewelry being sold on Etsy and bumper stickers. And so those are some of the places I look to gauge its growth. And so I'm very confident to say that the movement is growing, but it's really, I can't say with any confidence exactly how many people, other than certainly, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are interested in and participating in the phenomenon.
All right, we got to talk about the merch here. Is Q making money off Q, or are entrepreneurial others making money off Q?
Well, unfortunately, because I don't know who Q is, it's impossible to say.
Yeah.
And you can see, like, on 8kun, which is the site, it's sort of the Q went from 4chan to another message board to another message board where it is now. And the people who run that site also have started a political pack, which uses the same messages of sort of anti, quote unquote, deep state message, and then buy ads on that same platform. So they, and they'll both say that they don't know who Q is and that they're not running that site to make any money. And yet you can sort of track some finances there. Certainly, like, you can see that the book's being sold for $15 a copy on Amazon. You know, bumper stickers are like anywhere from $6 and up. But so it's not, I don't know. I certainly didn't find any evidence of anyone making an absolute windfall, but you can definitely see, I mean, people are being opportunistic. That's what people in America do. So people see the opportunity to make money and are trying, certainly.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. In another way of sort of approaching who ends up caught up in this belief system, you know, I have this saying that, like, it's really hard not to like people who like you. Something you discovered was that once you get on one of these message boards or into one of these Facebook groups, if you are by and large agreeing with the group that Q knows where it's at and everybody else is deluded or plotting in some way, there's a kind of acceptance there that has to be appealing to people who, for whatever reason, maybe don't find it everywhere else in their lives.
Yeah, I mean, there is a real community here. And I found that again and again in the people I talk to. And you can see it if you spend any time in the various corners of the internet where you find QAnon supporters that or followers, that they're really, you know, they're finding a community with one another, and also a sense of almost spiritual satisfaction, which is another big thing that I looked at for my piece.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because you really saw some similarities, I guess, between the way people maybe adopt a new religion. And I was thinking about, you know, you hear about groups that talk about sort of preaching the message, and if they can just get the word out, they will convert people. But there's always more to it than that. There's sort of the sense that you're part of a group, that you like the other people who are in the group. So talk a little bit about the quasi-religious nature of the adoption of these beliefs.
Right. So broadly, I mean, I definitely noticed that people were sort of expressing their faith and devotion to Q. So they're just, the language was religious in nature. Also, a lot of the sort of, you know, end times preoccupation is very much part of the Q narrative. So even substantively, there are religious aspects to this, the Q story. But then there's also, you know, people treating the Q drop sort of as foundational text that they have to decipher or interpret the way you might study the Bible, and people gathering together to sort of worship Q and the building of community that way. And then on an individual level, when I talked to people who were really the true believers, one of the things that surprised me was, you know, you hear about QAnon followers as being dangerous. Like, you know, we talked about the pizza shop, the man who walked into the pizza shop with a gun, or the man on the Hoover Dam. But the people who I met who are really into Q really, like, uniformly had this sense of serenity when they talked about it. That, and that was the quality that made me realize that there was something bigger that I didn't anticipate going into reporting this piece. That, and I talked explicitly about this with people who really believe in Q, that they really feel a spiritual aspect to this. Multiple people told me they felt like God had brought them to Q. And so So yeah, I mean, I think across a number of dimensions, you really could look at this as the birth of a new religion.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Paul calling us from Fort Worth, Texas. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I guess right in line with what you're discussing, I have a statement and a question. My mom is one of these people who feels devout, both to her faith and to the message and the goals of Pew. And I think it's probably because it's cloaked in the need to save children, mm-hmm. and the higher calling that's associated with that. But I'm struggling with how to deal with her in regular conversation and how to interact with that when it seems to veer so crazily off.
Thanks.
Of course.
Yeah. Thanks for your call, Paul. Adrian, any advice?
Yeah. I mean, so it's really interesting. It's challenging because it's not as simple when you're trying to present someone with facts or debunk a conspiracy theory. You know, there's a lot of research into this with the anti-vaccine movement, that it's not as simple as just saying, like, what you believe is wrong. Here's the right information. Please absorb it and act accordingly. And so it is challenging to bring people back into sort of enlightenment values. But one of the interesting, I mean, you're reminding me of one of the people I've talked to a lot over the years is a political scientist named Joseph Yusinski, who studies conspiracy theories. And his mom, I mean, this is someone who is one of the nation's experts in conspiracism. His mom has a really big Q follower. She stumbled upon it on YouTube. And I talked to her for the story I reported, and they sort of both chuckled about, they agree to disagree. But I think one thing that the caller just now pointed out that I think is really worth dwelling on is that there is this, because of the part of the narrative that suggests that children are being harmed, there is this sense of like, well, maybe it sounds ridiculous, but what if it's true? If we could help even one child, why wouldn't you sort of engage with the possibility that it's true?
Mm-hmm. Let me jump in here, Adrian. My guest is executive editor at The Atlantic, Adrian LaFrance. We're talking about the prophecies of Q. We'll be back in 2 minutes. You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Atlantic executive editor Adrian LaFrance, whose article for the June issue of the magazine is The Prophecies of Q. American conspiracy theories are entering a dangerous new phase. Adrian, just before the break, you were saying some people who embrace these beliefs say if it's even remotely possible that we could help some innocent children avoid being abused, why not sort of go with it and continue following? And it sounded like you had more to say.
Right. And sorry about that. So yeah, that is the sort of the mentality. And of course, there really are children who are in unsafe situations. And so I think this kind of like reliance on the absence of evidence to the contrary makes it hard to shut down any sort of any byway that a QAnon person might take you on. But the response to the caller who asked sort of how he should engage with his mom on this, I think the more, maybe the productive thing would be to find an institution or organization that supports children who are really in need of help and focus energies on the real problem and not the conspiracy theory about the problem.
How do Q followers make sense of things when Q's predictions fail to materialize?
Well, so this is another one of the sort of mind-melting aspects of this that I ask everyone I talk to, sort of, why do you still believe when so many things haven't come true? And what they'll say is that sometimes specific predictions are wrong on purpose and that itself is a clue, or that it might not have come to pass the way it was predicted, but eventually it will. And so it's just, again, it goes to this kind of intense faith people have in Q where the details don't matter.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Royce City. Bo is on the line. Hi, Bo.
Hello. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Go right ahead, Bo.
Okay, I think that one common thread among all of these Q supporters is lack of education. The best educated people came out of high schools between 60 and 74, and the girls burned their bras, the men burned their draft card, they wouldn't consume, they used drugs, and free sex. So the 1% decided to dumb them down and destroy the educational system, and this is the result.
Well, thank you for calling. Is there, are Q believers, Adrian, typically pretty poorly educated?
I don't know that I could make so sweeping a generalization. I think it's more about this anti-establishment worldview. I don't have evidence that they're poorly educated, although, of course, you know, it does, the widespread nature of this conspiracy theory does raise questions about people's ability to navigate the complexity of the informational environment. Like, why aren't people thinking more critically?
We should say, and I wanted to talk about this, one other recent theory that Q followers seem to have is that the long-suffering Anthony Fauci is making secret hand gestures when he's speaking publicly. Who is he supposed to be talking to?
Right. So there are wrapped up in this, especially over the course of the pandemic, is this sort of sub-theory that the coronavirus was deliberately unleashed upon the global population by this, the deep state working with China. Of course, there is no evidence to suggest that that's true. But Fauci has been sort of, as someone who is very prominently in the daily White House briefings for some period of time, he's been sort of swept up in this, in part too, because there was one press conference where the president referred to the State Department as the Deep State Department. And you could see sort of over his shoulder, Anthony Fauci kind of shaking his head and suppressing a laugh. And so that immediately took off on the internet and people used that against Fauci.
There are some people, we should say those who are Q skeptics, who actually think Q is being paid to post, or someone is being paid to post as Q as a draw to the platform that now hosts Q.
Right. So there's a lot of scrutiny of 8kun. This is the platform that, you know, Q went from 4chan to 8chan to 8kun. And so there's been there's a bit of a feud between the original 8chan founder and the administrator who currently runs 8kun. And one accuses the other of being Q. He denies it. And so there are endless or numerous theories about Q's identity. The interesting thing to me was that a lot of the people I talked to didn't seem to care that much who Q is, and that surprised me too.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go next to Elizabeth in Richardson, Texas. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there. I'm just wondering if Q could possibly be Russian.
Huh. Thanks for calling.
It's a great question. I mean, in the course of my reporting, it's not something I focused on, but I can say with certainty that we know the way that a foreign actor like Russia would benefit from sowing sort of political discord in America. And we've seen evidence of that. And so although I have no evidence to suggest that Russia was at all involved in creating or conceiving of Q, I think if you looked at sort of like Russian bot activity and the sorts of political debates that is attracting attention of foreign actors, certainly Q is on their radar.
Tell us a little bit about the experience of talking with people who believe in Q. Were they open to your questions? Surely they're aware that lots of people don't believe what they believe. Did they try to convince you? Did they sort of ask rhetorical questions that they thought would make it so clear why they believe what they believe?
It's interesting because I really found two camps. So the people who stand to profit off of Q did not seem as interested in talking to me. That's like the praying medic person we discussed. Also, other sort of Q influencers were not interested in talking. But the people who I refer to as true believers were really open and happy to talk and sort of saw it as an opportunity to evangelize. And in those conversations, I made clear that I didn't believe in Q, you know, that I see it as a conspiracy theory. And they were very kind and patient, honestly. They were very much like, well, do your own research and you'll figure it out. You'll see the truth eventually. But they weren't trying to explicitly persuade me. It was more that they wanted the world to know about their views.
Are those Q believers inclined to make, are they like preparing for some kind of apocalypse? Are they stocking up on food and supplies, that sort of thing?
I think you probably would find an overlap in sort of doomsday preppers and Q followers. I didn't focus on that aspect. And I don't think that it's an exclusive, like you're definitely a doomsday prepper if you're also a QAnon follower, but they certainly share a lot of similar worldview.
Are they politically active? One would assume that they are, you know, regular voters, but I honestly, I couldn't say.
Well, it's certainly a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. And so they're likely to be, like Q followers are likely to be Trump supporters. The other thing is there are sort of limited opportunities to see Q supporters gather en masse. And one of the places you'll find them is at a Trump rally. And other than that, it's, you know, just because you're wearing a Trump t-shirt also doesn't mean that you necessarily voted. And so it's not clear to me how politically active they are per se, other than this is quite clearly a pro-Trump conspiracy theory.
What did you learn about the uptake of Q-inspired thinking among members of and candidates for other public offices besides the presidency?
Right. So we've seen quite a number of congressional candidates. At the time when I was reporting my story, it was at least 35 current or former congressional candidates had publicly embraced Q, including one who had on his campaign site a sort of policy section devoted to Q. And even just this week, there was someone who won an election in the Pacific Northwest who has openly talked about her support of QAnon. So that it certainly has infiltrated the political realm on a national level.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Next on the line is Robert in Plano, Texas. Hi, Robert.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I'm hearing another voice.
I'm sorry. I apologize for that. If you could just ask your question, we'll get it answered for you.
Okay. In terms of the demographic support for this site, do you see any interaction with neo-Nazi white supremacist groups?
Thanks for calling.
You know, I didn't find any formal affiliation, although certainly you will see Q supporters espousing racist views. I mean, we also know that it's a pro-Trump conspiracy and the president himself has espoused racist views. And so I didn't seek or stumble upon any concrete affiliation to neo-Nazi groups, but I think there are some overlapping belief systems there for sure.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. It would seem, Adrian, as if it would be a political liability for someone, you know, at the level of the executive office to do anything that would cause anyone to think that they had any kind of affiliation with a group like this. It sounds like the president doesn't feel that way or perhaps isn't aware that he's appealing to Q folks. I mean, how deliberate are his signals to them?
You know, it's hard to say. I think certainly the people around him, he has a team of people who are very deliberate in terms of his social media presence. Obviously, he does his own thing on social media, too. But it is inconceivable to me that the people around him advising him are not aware of this. The extent of the president's knowledge is less certain to me. I think he also trusts the people around him to know what sort of buttons to push. And again, he's a master of captivating people's attention. And so much of that is innuendo. And to the point about political liabilities, I mean, this is a president who's shown again and again that the ordinary rules of politics just don't apply. And so the way that he thinks about a political liability is certainly different than other presidents that we've had.
We should note there are also people who think Q started as a goof, like some kind of satire of the kind of people who would believe in this.
Right. There are all sorts of theories about the origin. And one is that it was sort of influenced by this obscure Italian novel that was just sort of like, this would be fun. Let's see what happens. And then it took off accidentally. So, yeah, without knowing who Q is, it's hard to know for certain.
Are there copycats out there? Are there other sort of ways of thinking that have seen the success of Q and are trying to build followers?
Yeah, I mean, there's also the appearance of Q in the first place built on this trend on image boards of people claiming to be high level insider, you know, people from within the government or the military with insider knowledge. And so it is a bit mysterious why earlier Anons, as they're called, didn't take off in this way, but this one did.
Not surprisingly, one of Q's primary targets is mainstream media, that which you and I both practice for a living. Is there some reason why the media are seen as so dangerous by people who have these alternative belief systems?
So this again goes to this anti-establishment worldview in the sense that the institutions can't be trusted. And so when the overarching message is that there's a conspiracy of powerful people concealing the truth, it's very, you can see why someone might fit journalists or media companies into that narrative, because this is where people have relied for information for so long. And so in saying that people need to avoid the sort of official channels for information, naturally journalists get caught up. Also, you know, the president is very antagonistic toward the free press. And so because it's a pro-Trump conspiracy theory, they're following his lead there too.
Do you think the existence of Q poses a danger for the broader society?
Absolutely. I mean, it's again, it's this mass rejection of reason. And if we can't even on the most basic level agree upon what is real, or rely on empiricism or the scientific method to determine what's true, if people are just rejecting facts or fact finding, then society falls apart. I mean, it's tremendously dangerous to democracy and just to our ability to coexist in the world.
Were you uniquely tempted during this reporting project to try and talk the people you spoke to out of their beliefs?
Not necessarily. I didn't see my role as trying to convince them of the truth, but I did press. I mean, I at times, you know, there was one woman who I interviewed who said that she didn't think there was any harm being caused. And I sort of went down the list of dangerous things that have happened. And she was sort of like, oh, I've never heard of any of that. But so I did feel the need to confront falsehoods with facts. But that's, you know, I mean, as you know, that's what journalists do.
Adrienne LaFrance is executive editor at The Atlantic. Her article, The Prophecies of Q, American Conspiracy Theories Are Entering a Dangerous New Phase, appears in the June issue. Adrienne, thanks so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you for having me.
You can like our page on Facebook. We're also on Twitter at KERA Think. You can find the Think podcast wherever you get your podcast by searching for KERA Think. And you can listen anytime on our website as well, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.